Eric Zorin joins us. He's the publisher of something called the Picayune Sentinel. It's a weekly newsletter. Comes out on Wednesdays. He's a member of our Mincing Rascals podcast, too, which is wildly popular. He'll sign you up for his newsletter if you just click on ericzorin@gmail.com. He's the former Tribune columnist, and he says hi right now. Hi, Eric Zorin.
Hi, John Williams. How are you? You know, I always like to make the point that other countries have extreme mental health issues as well, and they don't seem to have nearly the number of mass shootings that we do. So I'm sure that mental health does play a role in some of these incidents. Clearly it does, but that in other countries, people also suffer from mental health problems, and we don't see this kind of daily carnage that we're seeing in the United States. So it's got to be something else.
I don't have it within my reach. Maybe I'll mention it a little later on, but somebody sent me an email today or yesterday, and it was the percentage of people who own guns and the incidence of mass shootings in other countries. And even in a country like Germany, where 30% of the people own weapons, the incidence of mass shootings is negligible. To say nothing of shootings of any kind. And when you go to places like England, Great Britain was in our mind because of the coronation of the king the other day, it just does not happen. Doesn't happen in Japan. Doesn't happen in even Canada, relative Mexico. Pick some places where we hear about violence. The incidence of gun ownership and the incidence of shootings like this is but a fraction of what we just consider normal in the United States. And we're so far down that road now, Eric, I don't even know if the comparison is helpful.
Yeah, I don't know either. I am the co-author of a book on the Winnetka schoolhouse shootings, which took place 35 years ago this month, if you remember, the Hubbard Woods Elementary School. And if you remember what a huge news story that was, and how Lori Dan, the shooter, was on the cover of People magazine, and it was, how did this happen? And we, like I said, I co-wrote an entire book trying to explore how it happened and how horrifying this was. And today, I feel like if one kid is killed in a school shooting, that's like page six news through most of the country
now. Yeah, you can't keep track.
You just can't. And out of Texas just this past week, at least, it just keeps going on and on. And so I think things really have changed. And there's that politicians who were sitting back and saying, well, mental health problems and what can we do? Second Amendment, that we really have to get our minds around this problem. And, we say this a lot. We said it after Sandy Hook. Nothing happened. But just the relentlessness of the occurrence of these crimes, we just can't sit back and say, well, what can you do? People are crazy, and they have the right to own guns. Well, something's got to happen.
So here are those numbers, just as a for instance. The percentage of guns per population, 3% in Great Britain, in the United Kingdom, and the deaths per 100,000 is 0.2. So 3% of the population has guns in Great Britain, and 0.2 per 1,000 people killed. In Germany, 32% own guns. The deaths by guns, 1% per 1,000. And the list goes on. Mexico, it's 15% with guns, 11%. In Canada, 34% with guns, 1.9%. In the United States, it's 122%. We have more guns than we have people. And the deaths per 100,000 is 12.2. All of those numbers are hugely larger than all of those others. Okay, let's move on to a couple of other topics. Dissenting view on Willie Wilson. Is this the headline in the latest Picayune Sentinel?
Yeah, I have two issues of the Picayune Sentinel that come out every week. One comes out on Tuesday, the other on Thursday. The Thursday one always has a preview or a promo for the Mincing Rascals, talks about what we talked about and everything. So if people want to keep up with the Mincing Rascals, you can just email me and I'll put you on the list. But I talked about Willie Wilson. The Tribune has made Willie Wilson a columnist. Every other week he's going to get an op-ed column in the Tribune. And I wrote a thing last week saying that, I just don't get it. Willie Wilson, I've watched him through two campaign cycles. He ran for mayor twice, and I've also seen him, run for president in Iowa and so on. And the guy just does not have a lot of deep thoughts about public policy issues. He wants to hunt criminals down like rabbits and so on. And I just thought, well, this is a very curious decision because he's kind of like the guy at the end of the bar who has a couple ideas like cut taxes and make people safer, but never any real meat on the bones. And so I wrote that, and somebody wrote to me and said, hey, you know, this is a racist critique of him. And he's a self-made millionaire who's compassionate, committed to Chicago, who has a greater sense of what impoverished youth on the South and West Side need, much more so than you will have and or that I will ever have. So, you know, I responded to that letter at some length in today's Picayune Sentinel. And I said that first of all, criticizing a black politician or black writer is not racist. I think you can see, when you write a column, you open yourself up to criticism. And I was certainly supportive of Mayor Lightfoot when she was running the first time. And, I will match my bona fides on that against anybody. But I just thought that Willie Wilson was a very strange choice to give a column to. And I looked at his first column, which ran last Thursday at the Tribune.
Yeah.
His argument was that you should. I mean, and we're sort of assuming that maybe he wrote it. I don't know that he did. I mean, it's not uncommon for politicians and CEOs and so on to have someone write their speeches and write their op-eds for them. So it's not that unusual. It doesn't sound like Willie Wilson. That's I'll put it that way. Sentences he wrote like "Herein lies the rub," and "A fiduciary has a legal and moral obligation to avoid conflicts of interest." That does not sound at all like the Willie Wilson who I heard in numerous debates over several election cycles. But be that as it may, his first column argues that Brandon Johnson, the mayor-elect, is going to be sworn in next week, because of his ties to the Chicago Teachers Union, should recuse himself completely from the negotiations with the Teachers Union when they hammer out their new contract coming up. And it's an interesting point, except that it loses the fact that when you're the mayor right now, before there's an elected school board, you're really responsible for everything that goes on in the teacher contract in the schools. You wear the jacket. If schools go down in quality, you're the one who's going to have to pay the price for it. So that he has a stake in negotiating this contract. And people voted for him knowing full well that he was a former employee, or he was at the time even an employee of the Chicago Teachers Union. And he has deep ties to that union. That union funded him. This was factored into the vote that the voters made at the time. So I'm not sure that it's a great idea for him to recuse himself from that. And in fact, there may be ways that he has the trust of the teachers union to make some deals that a Paul Vallis couldn't have made, that they will trust him to do the right thing by them. I'm not sure it's a great idea for him to step back, because every politician has all kinds of conflicts that are like that. Then he goes on in this column to say that we should be paying teachers for performance. He just kind of throws that out there because that would be a way to incentivize teachers to teach better. And, that's a whole topic in and of itself. He devotes a couple of paragraphs to it. But when you incentivize teachers based on test results, you're going to get a whole bunch of teachers who are going to be teaching to the test and nothing else. And I'm not sure that has any support among the education establishment, that that's a good thing. And it also implicitly blames the teachers in Chicago for not adequately dealing with the kinds of things that schools, particularly in disadvantaged neighborhoods, have to deal with. And then Wilson goes on to say that he thinks that that we need to have mandatory or required trade school education for teach the trades to students in grade school. He wants to required to learn a trade in grade school. He sort of throws that off. And I said, well, okay, you're requiring trade school education, and that's going to cost tens of millions of dollars if you can have equipment to learn the trades, electricians, plumbers.
I don't want to give up on the three R's when you're in seventh grade, for one thing. I mean, college isn't for everybody, and God bless the idea, but I think that's a little early, don't you?
Well, grade school is a little early, and requiring it is. I mean, I think that schools should definitely be offering that kind of material if they can. But then he turns around and talks about how he wants to cut taxes. So his whole thing all along in his campaign is cutting taxes. This is expensive. If you're going to be offering trade school education to every grade school student or even every high school student in Chicago, it's going to cost a lot of money. Doesn't talk about where he comes from. And then he finishes up by saying that the new school contract must include additional safeguards to protect children from sexual predators, which I think is I mean, you can't, as I said today, you can't argue with that because he doesn't offer any example at all of what those additional safeguards should be, you know, what in terms of personnel or education or cost or anything like that. It just sort of was throwing out ideas, which was kind of like the Willie Wilson we saw in the debates. He would just toss off an idea without any substance behind it. He had an extremely skimpy campaign website where you couldn't hardly figure out what he was talking about when he was proposing it. So I question why, and there were a number of excellent, smart people who could have written, think Cam Buckner, Sophia King, among the mayoral candidates, who would have been better positioned to write smart.
Well, but they didn't get 10% of the vote.
But that's not how a newspaper op-ed should work. Like, let's take really? A runner-up candidate and give it. I don't think so.
Well, I mean, 10% of the people said, I like what Willie Wilson is saying. Hunt them down like rabbits. We need more police. I wonder if his voice, whoever's writing it, deserves a platform. Although, the more you talk, Eric, the more I do hear the guy at the end of the bar going, all right, we need... protect the kids, and they should all learn how to weld. And the teachers should be based on performance, which means they've got to get good academic scores. And it's like, another one over here, please. By the way, Eric, if you host a radio show and you say something, then you get responses on the phone and the text messages. And it's so tempting to play whack-a-mole with every single thing that comes in, and you just can't do that. But I'm going to do that for just a couple of comments about the gun conversation you and I had. Hey, John, cigarettes kill more people than anything. Why doesn't Naperville and Illinois ban them? We do put limits on their use, but remember, I think the distinction is that cigarettes don't kill other people. Without getting into an argument about secondhand smoke, generally, if you smoke a cigarette, you are risking yourself. If you buy an AR-15, you are probably risking other people. And that's, I think, the difference there. Two other text messages, John. These guns are weapons of war and should not be in the hands of regular citizens. But 815 said, I'm not saying I'm for or against guns, but I do believe in the Constitution. I will also say that anyone who thinks banning the assault rifle will stop these shootings is delusional. You know, I agree with that second one, too. I don't think they're going to stop these shootings, but... I don't think it will hurt. And I like the idea. I like almost the message, Eric, that we said, okay, AR-15s are the weapon of choice in mass shootings. Let's stop selling AR-15s. I don't believe that's going to stop all mass shootings, but I like the symmetry. You know, it's like, hey, that's the thing that's killing all these people in the hands of a human being, granted. But that's the gun that human being is using. Let's stop selling them. That's all I'm asking. I'm not thinking it much further than that.
Yeah, you're not going to stop the shootings. And I think no one contends that you will stop these sort of shootings, but I think you can reduce them. If you look at how some of these killers got a hold of their weapons, they bought them legally in most cases.
Yeah, they do.
And so if they did not have those weapons, maybe they would have used different weapons. Maybe they would have used a shotgun or a hunting rifle or something. But when you have these guns with these huge magazines that are really, as you point out, they're weapons of war. I know technically they were never used in combat. And if you talk about weapons of war, you're going to get indignant text messages from people who say they were never actually used in war. But they have the same effect as a weapon of war. And the way the AR-15 bullets destroy human tissue when it goes through it, it's really gross and really awful.
Oh,
and
my.
I think that you can reduce the number of these things. And over time, we can make these weapons harder and harder to get. You're going to find people without easy access to them. We're going to resort to maybe other methods, or maybe won't do it at all. So I think that's a false argument to say that you can't. It's not going to stop them. Of course, it's not going to stop them, but it may well limit them.
Washington Post representation of what an AR-15's bullet does to a human body.
Yeah.
Is graphic and stunning. By the way, hey, John Williams and Eric Zorn, have you heard about smart guns? It will only work with a fingerprint of the owner. It's like an iPhone. This technology has been around for years. I have not heard about that. And Phil is listening in Minnesota. Hey, John, I listened online to hear some Connor Bedard talk and I was surprised to hear John Williams on the radio. I miss him. I forgot what good radio sounds like. We've become a wasteland since he left here in Minnesota. I need to listen to WGN radio more often. That's nice of you to say, Phil. Thanks for tuning in. Eric, the president has not done many press conferences. 60 seconds left here on the radio. We can talk about this maybe on our podcast, but what's your overall view about how Joe Biden is staying away from the microphones?
Well, he's dead last. If you look at the number of news conferences by this time in his administration, he's had basically half of what Obama had, or even George Bush, and George Bush Jr., the second W. And he's got to get out there. He's got to overcome the impression that a lot of voters have. And we saw this in the ABC News Washington Post poll, that he's not physically and mentally fit to be president. I mean, there's an incredible percentage, especially of independent voters, who think that Joe Biden just isn't up for the job. He's running for reelection. He's going to be 82 if he's sworn in for a second term. And when you have that perception out there, you need to get him out in front of the cameras, and he needs to make the case either way that he's fit or maybe he's not, but he's got to get out there. And I think because the polls are showing that Trump is beating him right now, and that's pretty scary to me anyway.
847, one last topic here about Willie Wilson again. Eric Zorn's flat wrong. Chicago is on a downward spiral. I don't know that we commented so much about that as we just wondered about the smorgasbord of ideas that Willie Wilson dad has and how's he going to enact them. And 773 said, I will now read the Chicago Tribune because of Willie Wilson. He's a Christian man who I respect. Okay, the Mincing Rascals podcast, we'll record it tomorrow. You can listen to more commentary like this when you download the podcast. And we'll talk to you next week, Eric Zorn.
Thanks, John. Talk to you soon.